Hello and welcome to the Cup of Tri Triathlon podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, cheercharge.co.uk.
Great tasting flapjack chia bars. You can use the code COT10 for 10% off.
Precisionhydration.com.
Leaders in triathlete sweat testing and hydration with multi-strength electrolytes that match how you sweat. We've got 15% off with the product code CUPOFTRI15.
Awesome. And team.oxygenaddict.com.
Online triathlon coaching featuring event-specific training plans and coaching guidance from Mr. Rob Wilby.
And we also want to say thank you to our patrons who are helping support the show. We've got some cool stuff coming up for the patrons, actually, Hells. I don't want to say too much about that yet, but anyone who's been a patron this year, I've got a little end-of-year surprise for them coming up. And even you don't know about it yet.
No, I don't.
So how about that, then?
Thanks for
you
that.
You don't. You're a bit nervous now. It's all good, don't worry. It's a nice little treat, so don't worry. I'm going to tell you all about it later on. So, Hells, welcome to the show. How are you, my friend?
Oh, Rob, I'm good. I'm happy. I've been at work. I've come home. I'm not hangry. I've eaten, so I am ready to rock with the podcast.
Good. And you getting a bit of training in recently?
I did a little cheeky swim this morning. I went out on my bike yesterday.
You're liking a bit of swimming, aren't you?
I'm loving the swimming.
Yeah, swimming, bit of biking.
Yeah, I went out on my bike yesterday for a little spin. Went up Sheep House Lane and back again.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Sheep House from home?
No.
That's a good old ride, isn't it?
No, I didn't go from home. I went from the barn car park where you can get, you know, sandwiches, tea, coffee.
Once you return. You didn't drive there. You didn't drive there and ride and drive back, did you?
I drove, I rode, I drove back.
Crikey.
Yeah.
I do not approve. I do not approve. You've got two wheels for a reason, so you can leave the four wheels at home.
You could have
ridden to Sheep House Lane from your house in about 2 hours.
Yeah, the whole ride was 2 hours. I don't think I wasn't up for 4 hours. Not yet, Rob. And then last night I went spinning as well. So I did like a double ride day. How did that happen?
Oh, very good.
Yeah, that was really
interesting.
Well, it wasn't really intended.
Sounds like Helen started to get back in shape, listeners. I wonder why that could be.
I don't think everyone knows yet, do they?
I was going to say to you, I don't know whether this is going to stay. Is it going to stay close to the chest? Is it going to be publicly revealed? How do you want to approach it? No pressure from me if you want to keep this under your hat for a while.
I reckon some people might have
guessed.
Do you
want to think about it for another couple of weeks?
Yeah, definitely. I think some people might have guessed, but yeah.
Yeah.
Bring on
right,
2017.
Keep it on the down low.
How are your triple run days, Rob?
Do you know, Hells, you keep bringing this up. It was only ever happened once. It's only ever happened once, and it will probably never happen again. I was so whipped from that. It took me about 2 weeks to recover from it.
single run days?
But, yeah, I'm running every day still. It's good.
Amazing.
I'm enjoying it, running every day. Been out on the bike a couple of times, yeah, it's been good.
Oh,
done a few push-ups. I'm thinking about doing the weights for the winter again, actually. I'm going to lift a little bit of weights.
Seriously,
Rob? A bit skinny at the moment.
I'm all over the weights.
Yeah, starting to fade away.
I'm all over the weights.
Maybe we could take up bodybuilding for a year. Maybe we'll do that instead of Ironman next year. Maybe we'll start lifting weights again. Right, come on, let's do the actual podcast, because if there's any new listeners, I'll be thinking, what are these idiots just rabbiting on about?
Yeah, fine. I want to tell you something funny about weights later, but we can do that later. Coming up on the show today, Rob, we have an interview with Olympic bronze medalist Vicky Holland.
Say that again.
Yeah, we...
Say that again. We have a... Who? Who's that now?
Vicky Holland is on the show this week, and it was really great to chat to Vicky. A few days ago, I caught up with her just after the parade through London, so it's good to hear about that, and it was really good to hear about that race in Rio. And the bit, Rob, which you'll listen out for later, at one point, she was not running sub 40 minutes for a 10K. That is how much she has improved.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So, look out for that. Or listen out for that.
Yeah, so anyone who's currently not a sub-40-minute 10K runner, there's still hope for you to go out and win. Get that right. Olympic medalist Vicky Holland is on the show. On our little podcast that we started just under 2 years ago, Olympic bronze medalist Vicky Holland.
It's good, isn't it?
That's That's pretty cool, Helen.
Yeah. So Vicky Holland.
That's pretty cool.
Thank you very much for your time and for coming on the show. We really enjoyed catching up.
I loved it. I love this interview. It sounds like you and her are best mates sitting in the kitchen having a cup of tea. It's a really, some interviews go really well, and this is one of those where I was like, okay, well, yeah, if she's coming around for a brew if she's ever down in the Knutsford area, that's awesome.
Tea and cake, Rob.
Yeah, you gotta love it. Tea and cake will smooth over any social situation.
Yeah, love it.
We've got, all right, come on, let's jump into this week's results, Helen, shall we? Results this week sponsored by Precision Hydration. Anyone who uses the code CUPOFTRY15 in the month of October will get entered into the prize draw to win a free sweat test worth £95. Now, I was having a nosy on their performance blogs earlier on today, and I don't know if you've seen this, but I mean, there's no reason why you in particular should be interested in this, Helen, but they've got a blog about a guy called Andy Sloan who recently got a Kona slot at Ironman Wales. So that could be an interesting read for some people, couldn't it?
It could be a very interesting read for some people.
It made me giggle, actually, because Andy is an old mate of mine from back in the day. We did a coaching course together about 6 or 7 years ago, and he's a really good guy, and he's obviously got much more into triathlon since back then when he was pretty much just starting. I think he'd just done one Ironman when I met him, and he went to Ironman Weymouth, didn't have a good race, and then raced again at Ironman Wales the weekend later and got his Kona slot and finished, I can't remember, I think he was 18th overall off the top of my head, having raced an Ironman the weekend before. So pretty cool performance.
That is impressive. That's some good bounce back ability.
Yeah, they've got some good blogs over on the old Precision Hydration blog on their website, so I'd go over and check those out, actually. They do a real good job of putting interesting content up there, so you never know, Helen, you might find some interesting tips that might help you out there in the future.
I will check it
possibly
out.
Possibly.
I will check it out.
Oh. Right, I think we should start with talking about the Xterra World Championships over in Hawaii.
Yes.
Well, we've had three-peat for Flora Duffy. It's really good to see her finally get that big race result this year that she deserves, isn't it?
Oh, she was on the, you know, during the Olympics, she was on the front of the bike as well, hammering away. So yeah, she's so talented, isn't she, to then go and become Xterra World Champion again.
Yeah, so 3 times Xterra World Champion. She was Beck Keats' big top tip for either a medal or the gold at the Olympics. And it just didn't happen for her, did it? She just, like, every time she went to the front on the bike and tried to get away, either people wouldn't ride with her or they'd get organised behind her, and then, yeah, it just didn't work for her. But she looked so strong on the bike.
Yeah.
So I've always fancied, actually, Helen, the idea of going over to Maui the week after doing Hawaii and doing kind of the double up.
Well, there is an Xterra Wales next year, Rob.
Yeah, well, be an interesting one for doing, wouldn't it?
I think it would be. I know some people who have already signed up and paid their money.
Yeah, are you going to go and race or are you going to go and support?
I think I'm going to go and support.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think.
Would you win, if you did Xterra Wales next year, would you win a slot for that year? Or would you win it for the following year?
Well, the race is in June, so...
You'd think it'd be for the same year then, wouldn't you?
Yes, yeah. So it's going to be based at Atlantic College, which is on the south coast, and it just sounds great.
Yeah.
Sounds really good. So yeah, have a little Google of Xterra Wales if you are UK based, and get on your mountain bike over winter, because it could be another option for next season. But Rob, over in Maui, so Flora Duffy took out the win in 3:14. Another really comfortable win there, because Leslie Patterson of Great Britain was second in 3:25 ahead of Susie Snyder of the USA in 3:29. And Jackie Slack, who we have had on the show before, was seventh in 3:41.
Good effort. Well done. Yeah. Seventh place. Very decent result there. It's a big win, that, isn't it? 11 minutes ahead of the next person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big old gap. In the men's race, Mauricio Mendez of Mexico takes it out in 2:49 from Ruben Ruzafa from Spain in 2:51. And Ben Allen takes third. Ben Allen is Jackie's
other half.
Partner.
Yeah.
Other half, yeah. So well done, Ben. Good to see him get a bronze medal.
I think it'd be really cool to... It would be cool to watch, wouldn't it, Rob, as you were saying?
Yeah, I think... it's the big dream, isn't it? You go to Hawaii and you've also qualified for Xterra and you stick around for a week later and you do that race as well. How on earth you manage the logistics of getting two bikes over to Hawaii, I'm not quite sure, but it would be a cool second race to do after you've done Ironman Hawaii, wouldn't it?
Is
it 2 weeks later?
No, it's three, isn't it? But three.
Yeah, we're not doing that then.
The atmosphere, though, Rob, must be so strange if you did do one and then the other, just because Xterra gives off a completely different vibe.
Yeah, and I think it's got that kind of end-of-term party feel about it, hasn't it? I think there's a lot of people take it very seriously,
yeah.
But then there's kind of a bit of a more laid-back vibe, like you said, with it.
Yeah, so
yeah.
One day.
One day, yeah, we shall see. And I tell you where else might have a laid-back vibe is Challenge Aruba. Sitting there looking at the Challenge Aruba website right now, and I've got to say, I think if I went to race there, I'd just want to lie on the beach and not do anything else, really.
It does look pretty picturesque, doesn't it?
It really does, yeah. And we had a win for the wonderful Yvonne van Vleuken.
Yes, former...
friend of the show, took it out in... Go on, sorry.
No, I was going to say, former interviewee. We had her on a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and she, if you haven't heard that interview, go back and check it out in the archives, because it's one of those ones that leaves you feeling happy and positive at the end of it, isn't it? And you just want to go out and do stuff. So I sent her a little email earlier on to congratulate her, and she replied and said, oh, thank you, I'm so happy about it. Mm-hmm. So she takes that out in 4:27 from Lindsay Corbin in 4:33 and Miriam Weird in 4:37. And the other cool thing about this is Yvonne's, I don't know whether it's partner or husband, Per Bittner, won the men's race.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's a good day in the Bittner van Vleuken household, isn't it?
Yeah, and it must be really amazing when those days happen when both of you have an incredible race.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty rare, isn't it?
It is. And as well, because Yvonne didn't quite have the race that she was hoping for at Hawaii. So it's really good for her to go and pick up a win there. And hopefully they get to have a bit of an end of season holiday now as well, right?
Oh, yeah. And just if I wasn't sure where Aruba is, Rob, it's in the Southern Caribbean, about 15 miles north of Venezuela. That'd be a really nice place to go.
Yeah, it was on my list of places to go and work at when I was a windsurfer. There's a little chain of islands, Aruba, Bonaire and Cabarete, in a little chain. And they get beautiful wind all the time through our winter. So it was on my list. Do you know what? They had a sprint triathlon there as well. And I'm just looking at the results there. And Lisa Norden was in second.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, pretty cool.
Loving the knowledge. Loving the knowledge.
It's not knowledge. I'm just reading the results off the website. But imagine... I have to hold my hands up. I've not heard of Ronze Postma, who took the win, but imagine taking down Lisa Norden. It's a pretty big scalp to take in the sprint race, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, you'd be pretty chuffed with that one. Definitely.
Yeah, you would be. You'd be made up with it.
Rob, did you notice that Emma Pallant was racing out in Thailand again, as was Stuart Hayes?
Well,
Stuart Hayes got fourth, and he said it was the most brutal race he has ever done.
Was it 70.3?
Yeah, it was a 70.3.
That's a hot place to race.
This is Challenge Thailand, right? Emma Pallant said, thanks, Challenge Thailand, for an amazing race and hospitality. Obviously just fainted on the run due to the amazing breathtaking views. Hashtag brutal.
Oh, bless. Yeah. Just get me to the finish line. That's all it is. Get me to the finish line and fill me full of precision hydration. I think I would actually die if I tried to race in that humidity. You'd find like this crinkled bag of dehydrated salt at the side of the road in a tri-suit. That'd be me. There's just no way. Couldn't live through it.
I would be rubbish in that heat as well. Rubbish. Okay. There you go.
Well, good job we're not planning to have you race in Hawaii anytime soon then, right?
No, good job.
Deep breath and move on, right?
Very good job.
All right, let's do some news then, because we've got some cool news coming up this week. News is sponsored by cheercharge.co.uk, and they're running a competition to win a box of Cheer Charge flapjacks and other various delicious yum-yums worth £32. So if you go to cheercharge.co.uk/blog/cupoftry, all you've got to do is enter your email address in there, and there'll be a prize draw done in about a week's time. It's happening at the end of October, so you've still got time to go over and do that. I was loving the Chia Charges this weekend. Hells was out on a trail run with a couple in my pocket, and I've got to say, I think chia seeds are the way forward for me. I'm really loving them.
That's cool. I've been putting the chia seeds to good use again, Rob, in doing a little bit of baking again. So those chia seeds,
nice.
And then I don't know, mixing them basically with like oats and quinoa and honey and peanut butter and a bit of dried fruit and nuts, and then whack it in the oven, and you kind of come out with some sort of nutty, yummy chia seed thing.
Helen, we should have you baking. We should have Helen's baking show. That's what we should have going on. You should make this stuff and talk about it. And my mouth is salivating just listening. You could sell it at the end of the show and people could buy it mail order. And you'd like it to sell out by the end of the show.
Possibly.
Helen's Kitchen, I'm telling you. Think about it, mate. Helen's Triathlon Kitchen.
Oh, yeah. It's
you're
what, it's
you're a good baker. You are a really good baker, to give you your due.
Work in progress. We'll come back to... We'll have more baking news as well. So I need to tell you baking news and bodybuilding news, right? So they're the two things we'll catch up on shortly. But in like triathlon news, should we start with Ironman have announced a new full distance race?
Yeah, I've got a couple of guys I coach who live in Italy, and they're both totally psyched by this race. It's meant to be in a really beautiful location. So Ironman Italy. And do you want to have a crack at the pronunciation of this, Hells, with your beautiful foreign accents?
I'm going to try Cervia.
Very good. Yeah, I like the sound of that. The seaside town in the Emilia-Romagna province of Italy, and close to Rimini.
Yep.
Which has had several big races before, but the guys I coached said, oh man, it's just a brilliant, brilliant location. Really, really like beautiful, stunning Italian scenery. So they're changing their race plans to go and race there by the sounds of things.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
I love it. So that's going to be on the 23rd of September, 2017.
So it's going to be it'll be a next season qualifier, that won't it? It's after the cutoff.
Yes. Yep. Correct. Yep. So
good stuff. So I wonder if it'll end up be a super high quality field like they get in, you know, Barcelona and places like that. Everyone who wasn't qualified goes and races there instead. It does look nice in the pictures, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does look very nice. Yes. Another one for the... You just see like palm trees on the beach. Anything with blooming palm trees on a beach is appealing during October in the UK, isn't it?
All we want to do is just go on holiday, isn't it?
It's exactly.
Not necessarily go and race. We just want to go on holiday. Yeah, so that looks like a good one. And what else do we have in triathlon news?
Well, we have a bit of news that I'm going to mention this now, Rob. So we had John McAvoy on the show.
John McAvoy.
May time, I think.
I think so,
John
yeah.
McAvoy was the guy who was a former prisoner and has basically turned his life around through sport. And you might have seen John on the TV recently, on the radio recently. He's kind of been everywhere in a good way because his book called Redemption is out now. And the good news is, Rob, we have two copies to give away. So
Brilliant. The
competition is going to close on the 31st of October, which is Monday. And all you have to do is go onto @cupoftry on Twitter, look at our pinned tweet.
Or Facebook. You can do it on Facebook too, don't forget.
Yep. So retweet or share, follow us, and then we also want to know what gets you through a hard race.
So they've got to tell us what gets you through the hard times in a race. And are we doing a prize draw for this, or are we going to decide what we think the best answer to the question is?
It's going to be a prize draw.
Prize draw. Cool. So two copies of John McAvoy's book up for grabs. You can do this on Twitter or on Facebook, but only one will count. And you've got to either follow or like us. You've got to retweet or share and tell us in the comments what gets you through the hard times of a race. Cool. Yeah, he's been on the telly a lot. You did well, Helen, getting in early with him.
Well, it was really good. He's got a good story to tell.
Yeah, he absolutely has.
Really good story to tell. So yeah. Yeah, his book, if you don't win a copy through us, you can buy it. It's called Redemption, and it is out now, John McAvoy's book.
Do you know what? And this ties in nicely with Redemption here, because a bit of redemption happened for Lucy Gossage. And we've got a bit of news about her, because I think we erroneously reported that we thought she was kind of retiring from triathlon a couple of weeks ago, and she's definitely not. She's getting a job, and it was my impression certainly that like maybe she was stepping back from triathlon, but there's a great interview with her on Tri247 saying I'm definitely not retiring, and it says she's going to go and race Ironman Wales next year and take a year off Kona, but then wants to go back to Kona the year after.
Yeah,
still racing pro, so that's good news, isn't it?
Brilliant news. Yeah, really, really good. No, I knew that she was going to go back to her job, and I knew that I had read that she was definitely not going to be at Kona next year, but almost like a watch this space.
Yeah, there we go. So we're getting her back on the show, aren't we, soon as well?
Yeah, we're going to catch up with her later this week. So
fingers crossed, if the stars align.
We'll be able to hear exactly what her plans are.
Yeah, great stuff. All right, well, let's do Coach's Couch before we do go into the interview of the week, shall we?
I reckon, yeah, why not?
Yeah, let's do that. And before we do the Coach's Couch question, I had a really cool email come through, and I want to say thanks to Lee Spohr, because he's listened to the show all of this year, he says. I've been concentrating on two Ironmans this year, Challenge Regensburg and Barcelona, with the aim of going sub-11. I ended up going 10:46 and then 10 hours 9 at Ironman Barcelona, so I feel this season has been a big success. I followed the patented Cup of Tri Rob Wilby 9-1 run walk strategy, and even though it was hot, I ended up with an Ironman run PB. While I didn't exactly feel like Haile Gebrselassie, I never had a bad patch, and in fact, I sped up between the 28 to 36K markers, which is where most people are typically falling apart. So it shows that there's another person who's sold on this run concept, and if it's in capital letters, if I race another Ironman, I'll definitely be doing it again. So thanks for the help, and hope this feedback is of some use. So nice one, Lee. Thanks, man. I really appreciate you taking the time to write. That's very decent of you.
That's cool. And Rob, if anyone else does have a question for you, what is your email address where people can contact you?
Yeah, you can do it on Twitter or Facebook, or you can send it through email to coachrobwilby@oxygenaddict.com. And we'll try and line them up and get them on the show as we go along. So who did we have this week? We had a question from David Irwin on Twitter.
Yep, correct. And David says, what is the value of going away for winter training in Europe?
Well, the big value, Helen, is we get to be on holiday in Europe in the wintertime, isn't it? Blue sea, palm trees. All joking aside, though, I think the big value of going away, if you're based where we are and you're going to have a long, cold, disgusting winter, the first thing is you're going to be able to go away and get some riding in the sunshine. So I'm not necessarily, I think when we talk about Europe, we're always talking about going to the Canaries, aren't we, Hells?
Or, you know, Lanzarote. So yeah, exactly, which is a Canary. Yeah. Yep.
Lanzarote or I was going to say Pleitas, but that's the name of the resort, isn't it? Fuerteventura or Gran Canaria. Yep. The big benefit of those is the flights from the UK are cheap, and they get almost guaranteed consistent weather through the British or the Northern Hemisphere winter. So every time we've been out for a training camp, we've had consistently over 20 degrees every day. I think we've had maybe one day on every training camp where it's rained a little bit. But generally you get to go out and you get to ride in the sun all the time. It's warm. And one of the big benefits of riding over there is there's so much less traffic on the roads, and the roads are so much better quality than we get in this country, aren't they?
Yeah, smooth as.
Yeah. I think that the biggest unspoken benefit of going away, and I think this is kind of implied in the question, winter training being like a training camp or a training holiday type thing, is you can get so much more training done when you're away for a 5 to 7 day period than you possibly ever could do at home. And so it isn't unusual for the camps we've done for guys to train 20 hours, 30 hours, 35 hours even within a given 7 day period. And that sounds like a massive amount of time, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, something that unless you take a week off from work at home, and but so it would be difficult to do that because you have everything else. You have family, you know, you have washing, chores, whatever.
Totally. Yeah.
That then it is difficult to put that together.
Yeah, it does sound like an insane amount of training to do in 1 week, but I think when you're just at a resort where all you've got to do is, you know, the meals are made for you, you turn up in the morning, you train, you eat, you train, you eat, you train and go to bed. There's no distractions. There's no hoovering to be done. There's no laundry to be done. You can just recover from that training so much quicker. And initially, I think the danger is to think, well, I'll just kill myself if I try and do 20 hours of training or 30 hours of training in a week. But it always amazes people how much they can actually get done when all they've got to focus on is training, eating and sleeping. So, yeah, so that's the big value of it, I think, there, David. So get yourself on a winter training camp.
Rob, I'm going to give a perspective, a slightly different perspective here, because last year I didn't go on a training camp. And okay. Previously, so 2 years I've done a training camp, and I think 2 years I've probably haven't. So last year I didn't do one, and the winter felt very, very long indeed, having to do all of the turbo and probably still quite a bit of running at that point. So it did feel quite long, but I think come race season, I don't feel like I was sort of further behind, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
But then the previous years that I had done something and I had been away, it almost gives you a cheeky little bit of confidence in that you come back and you kind of think, oh great, it's all right, you know, I can do 4 hours on a bike without a problem.
Yeah, because it's hard to do that in the winter in this country.
Exactly. So you kind of get that ride in and you're like, oh yeah, brilliant, okay, I can do this. Actually, sorry, I'm talking absolute rubbish. I went to Cyprus at the end of last March, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
I did, but it wasn't...
I was thinking, Helen obviously doesn't count that as winter training.
I was thinking, oh, we took bikes, didn't we? I did a race out there, yeah.
So I forget all of that. It turns out Helen just loves doing training camps. Brilliant.
Maybe the year before I didn't go. Anyway, whatever. If you don't go, it feels like a long winter. If you do go, there's that added little...
It definitely
bonus.
Breaks the winter up, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. All right, I'll tell you what, let's shuffle over to our interview and then we'll catch up on those few extra little bits you were telling me about. So go on, introduce us, Hels. If anyone's not heard of today's interviewee, who are we interviewing?
We are interviewing the one and only Vicky Holland. Vicky Holland, hello and welcome to the Cup of Tri Triathlon podcast.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Thank you very much for coming on. So how was London? You've just been celebrating all the medalists.
Yeah, London was really special. So many people came out to watch in Trafalgar Square. Not a spare inch, I think, of the entire Trafalgar Square, and people leaning over railings to get even closer. And yeah, just to be welcomed and supported like that was really, really nice. Because I just think that we're a couple of months on from the Olympics now, and everyone's going to have forgotten about us and gone back to normal. But the amount of people that came out was really humbling. That they will still think that we're amazing. That's pretty cool. And then from there we went to Buckingham Palace, and that was even more special. You know, I got to meet the Queen and Duke of Edinburgh and Prince Harry, Princess Anne, have a little chat to them all, and that was really special. Yeah.
Wow, how did that compare to after London 2012?
Well, London was really different for me, because of the training group I was in. I actually went to America pretty soon after the Olympics had finished. So I was in the UK for a couple of weeks. Then I went to America and I was there for sort of a month or so because I still wanted to carry on racing the season. And the season was very different in 2012 in that the grand final wasn't until, I think it was like the end of October. So I was still sort of in race mode, and as a result I missed all of the things back here, like the parade and stuff, and so I never went to any of these things. So this time is my first time doing a lot of it, and on top of that it's even better because I'm doing it as a medalist.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's fun.
So how did the whole of Rio and your race compare to your race at London?
Oh, again, so different. I think with London there was no pressure on me because I was there as a team member, a team role, if you like, trying to support Helen Jenkins at the time, and our goal was to try and win a medal for her. Both myself and Lucy were chosen for our sort of capacity to potentially try and aid Helen's medal winning chances. Helen was harbouring an injury, which obviously wasn't widely known in the build-up, but given what she was battling, given the pain she was in on a daily basis, she just did incredibly well. And I know she said since that she had no right to finish as highly as she did, but that was just a testament to her sort of sheer guts, really. And at the end, there was this this real, we were all a bit upset, a bit emotional, I think, because we felt like we'd come pretty close, but we hadn't quite done the job. I'd been involved in a crash, which meant that I'd been, you know, pretty much no use at all. So my whole build-up had been based around doing a good job on the swim bike, and I crashed out on the first lap of the bike. I managed to obviously get back up and finish, but it just was, it was a feeling of having not really fulfilled what I was supposed to do. And Helen was obviously, you know, a bit disappointed not to come away with a medal, but I think in hindsight now she feels that she performed out of her skin because she was so injured at the time. So it was a real emotional, but no pressure beforehand, a lot of emotion afterwards, a bit of feeling of disappointment, but then the crowds and the support that we had, because it was a home Olympics, was next to none. Like, I don't think I'll ever see that support level again at a race. You know, Rio was incredible. People did come out to support us. There was a lot of naysaying that no one would come and that it would be a washout, and you know, these events were going to be terrible and no one could get tickets, but then there were millions of tickets, and there was a lot of chatter about it beforehand, but actually so many people came, and again, it was really well supported. It wasn't London, and I will say that, and I don't think anything ever will be. Maybe I'm biased, but London was just something absolutely special and unique, and you know, I love the fact that I got to compete at home games, because so few people can ever say that. But the build-up and the actual race in Rio were completely different for me. You know, I was going there as a contender, and I knew I was going there as a contender, and that's what we'd spent, you know, a year, 18 months trying to make sure that when I got there on that day, I was a contender. So in some ways it was really great. I stepped on the plane knowing that I'd done everything I could do, and I felt amazing about that. But then in a couple of days immediately before it, you're a bit more nervous because because you know, if you perform right, you're going to come home with a medal, and that's, you know, everything you ever wanted. So very different sort of experiences from one to the other, definitely.
Was it a complete different mental approach as well? Because as you said, for 2012, you were going there to help someone else, whereas 2016, it was all about, you know, you and what you could do on the day.
Yeah, it was, but I think that wasn't something that was specific to the Olympics. I think that was something that has been changed within me over the last 3-4 years. So from the point of the Olympics in 2012, I realized, you know, I'd come a hell of a long way in the last sort of 3 years of my career up until that point. And to get to the Olympic Games is something that not many people would have said, and no one would have said even in 2008 that would have happened. But I wanted a bit more. I wanted something else. I wanted to start winning stuff. Yeah. You know. So I made changes. You know, I made some big changes in my life, in my career, in my setup. I moved to Leeds. I did lots of things quite differently. I changed the way I trained, and my attitude changed with it. You know, as soon as I won a Commonwealth medal, the belief that I had completely changed. It was like, actually, I can do this. That was the first major podium I'd ever had. I'd never had a podium in a World Series, not even in a World Cup. And then I got third at Commonwealth Games, and I think that changed my mindset. So my mindset has been kind of slowly developing, I guess, over the last 4 years, to the point where when I actually got to Rio, I was already in a different mindset that had been sort of honed for 4 years. But it is different going to an Olympic Games when you know that if you get it right, you'll get a medal, than if I get it right, I get a medal for someone else. That is definitely very different.
Yeah. And would you say that Glasgow then, in sort of a real simple terms, as well as being an incredible home games experience, was also like a massive confidence booster then?
Oh, completely. And I think I didn't really realize it until afterwards. I never thought of myself as someone who lacks confidence. I've never thought of myself as someone who didn't believe that I could achieve, because I've always had these dreams. You know, ever since I've been 6 years old, I've thought about the Olympic Games and been infatuated with it. And I never thought that I was I didn't believe that I could do it. But then when I actually won something, won a medal at a major championships, it changed everything. And I was like, either all of a sudden I've become really arrogant, or I just wasn't actually that confident before. So we'll go with that. I wasn't that confident before. but I'm not actually sure. But it did. Commonwealth Games absolutely changed it to me. And I think what was actually really important for me at Commonwealth Games was I was still very sort of pragmatic about it. I knew I'd won a bronze medal, but I knew that realistically I was still the fourth best Brit at that time. So Helen and Non both couldn't compete because of injuries, but I ended up finishing third behind Jodie as well, so though all three girls were ranked in front of me at that point. And you know, I know the maths, four doesn't go into three. We only had three spots for the Olympic Games, and I had to go up a notch. If I wanted to qualify even, I had to go up a notch, let alone get to the games. So yeah, I had this massive confidence booster that maybe my own parameters weren't quite where I thought they'd always been. Maybe I could be a bit better than that. And maybe this was just the start of something for me. I had a real sense of that this was kind of just the beginning. And then with a little bit more hard work, we got there.
And was it scary, Vicky, when you did sort of say, you know what, I'm going to make these big changes, I'm going to move to Leeds? Was there this sort of sense of, oh, what if?
Yeah, there was a little bit. But honestly, I think what really went for me is that I'd had changes in my life, changes in my personal circumstances, and everything kind of just pointed one way. It was one of those moments where maybe, you know, I don't want to harp on about fate and destiny and things like that, because I'm never sure whether I believe in it or not. but it did feel like everything just led me there. So off I went. And the first couple of months, actually, I just remember, I just loved it. It was something new. We were doing very hard miles, lots of volume. And this was probably the biggest change in my training that I made. I put in a hell of a lot more volume than I'd ever done before. And I was tired 24/7. Yeah. You know, I think that first year, our head coach reckons there's about three of us who'd gone to Leeds that time. We were all overtrained for about the first 6 to 9 months of that year, because we were just absolutely battering ourselves every day. But I loved it. I had a new training group. I had new people around me. I had a new environment. I had a new place to live. And I've loved living in Leeds, actually. I've been so surprised at how nice a city it is, as well as a training environment, and it just kind of works there at the moment. That's not to say it will always be the place I am, place I'm based, but at the moment it's really worked for me, and that really carried me through when I first moved there. There wasn't really any time where I sat back and went, what have I done? You know, is this right for me? Actually, I think pretty much every day, even though I was tired, I'm going out the door with Non and five other girls, and I'm thinking, I love this. I absolutely love this. And it makes the hard miles easy when you've got people around you who are great to be with as well.
You basically get to spend every single day with a really good bunch of friends.
That's kind of how it is. And, you know, I talk about this a lot to people, that they say, oh, you do that so hard. How do you do it? And I'm like, well, you surround yourself with the right people. And I think for me at that point in my career, I really needed that. Mm. I'd been in a group abroad for sort of 3 years, and you spend quite a lot of time with a bunch of girls, but equally you do quite a lot of individual stuff as well. And then after that, I'd spent a year floating around trying to find my place where I was going to go to. And I'd done so much on my own. I knew I needed people. I knew I needed a group of people around me. And what I found in Leeds was really, I walked into sort of a ready-made friendship group. And they were everyone was so welcoming to me, and I just can't really thank them all enough. I absolutely lapped it up, you know, my first year there in Leeds. It was just great. Now I'm not quite so enthusiastic when I have to get out on the bike, but that first year, God, I loved it. So maybe that's why I'm still, you know, reaping the success now. I put in sort of this mega year of mega volume, and it was just sort of felt relatively easy because I just had people to do it with.
And was there like a different level of intensity from being with Darren Smith and his D squad to then going to Leeds? Because, you know, at Leeds, sort of everyone knows you're training alongside the Brownies, that kind of thing. Was it a different sort of experience, a different kind of vibe?
I think it was less intense in Leeds, you know. So I think being in Darren's group was incredible for me, and I always have to say that without him, I would have probably quit sport in sort of middle of 2009. I was about done. I was finishing last at national championships, and it was time to go and get a proper job. You know, I wasn't making any inroads, and I couldn't run faster than 40 minutes for 10K, and it was a mess. You know,
seriously, what had happened then?
It's really hard to put my finger on it. I get asked this a lot. I think I went to university as an athlete who was a really good swimmer and a really good runner. And I thought I was going to be the next Kelly Holmes. I thought that's where my career was going. She just won both her Olympic golds that same summer, 2004. And I thought that was where my career was headed. I'd won English Schools 1500. And, you know, that was where I thought I was going to go to. And I got sort of drafted into triathlon at university. But if I'm honest, I don't think looking back, I was ready for it. I don't think I actually wanted to move sports yet. I think I enjoyed myself a lot at university, which maybe comes into it a little bit as well. And I think
you had a life.
Read into that what you will. I did. I had a life. And in a lot of ways, I really don't regret that, because I think I needed that time to let loose, enjoy myself, become a bit independent, grow up a little bit. You know, I'd always thought of myself as relatively mature as a teenager and stuff. But actually looking back, I think I was just very good at sort of going where I needed to go for each time of day, right? So I have to be at the pool now, I have to be at school now, I have to be at the running track now. And we just get it done. And with the help of my mum, who, poor woman, was my constant taxi and diary mixed into one. I mean, you know, my dad has to be thanked as well. But I have to say the majority of this did go down to my mum, poor woman. So yeah, I just kind of did what I needed to do because mum would take me. If I said I wanted to do all these swimming and running sessions and all the rest of it, well, she'd just make sure I got there. Yeah. Whereas I got to university and I had to do that myself. And I think in a lot of ways I wasn't actually ready. I wasn't mature enough. I wasn't independent enough at that point. And I think also I wasn't that sold on triathlon yet. Yeah. And it took me probably my entire time at uni to really figure out that I was sort of wasting myself a little bit. And that I wasn't committing hard enough and that I hadn't been ready for that kind of independence when I'd got it at 18. As much as I was dead excited to go off to university, I actually probably wasn't really ready to take charge of myself in that way.
Yeah.
So I left university and spent a year again trying to claw my way back. And it was just at the end of that year that I joined Darren. But that year was my sort of my year to give it a go. And if it hadn't worked out, that's when I would have called it a day. Yeah. And fortunately, I managed to get into Darren's group in the July, almost exactly a year after I'd finished university. And having finished, as I said, last at national championships in the May, I then qualified for under 23 world championships in, must have been like August time, in London, at the London Tri. And then came fourth at under 23 world championships in September. So that's a hell of a turnaround. And my 10K time came down 4 minutes that season in just a few months.
That's
which
amazing.
Is an absolutely massive jump, isn't it? I know. And I think for me, that just showed me what would happen if I did things right. I think I just hadn't been doing it right. Darren really taught me how to be like a professional athlete. So I have a hell of a lot to thank him for. But his environment was intense. There was definitely that side to it, that it's very much, if you're going to be in, and he's very clear about this, you know, if you're going to be in his group, you pretty much have to just get on with it.
Yeah.
Don't ask too many questions. And if you do expect some of them, you'd be told to shut up. You know, and like, that's fine because he has his methods and he has his way. And, you know, over analyzing every single move isn't actually what you need to do as an athlete. Sometimes you just got to trust in the coach and get on with it. And I think that was his point.
Yeah.
But it did mean that sometimes it was a relatively intense environment. And along with that, you've got the fact that it's virtually all girls in his group. So there were maybe three up to four, I think, at any one time, boys. At some times there was only one or two boys, but there was always a very top heavy girl sort of balance, really.
Yeah.
So that, I think, then adds to the intensity a little bit. You're competing basically in every training session against all the same people that you're going to compete against in the World Series.
Yep.
So as much as we actually had a really good group that got on very well and did support each other, it was intense. You know, we did actually end up smashing each other to pieces in certain sessions just because it would turn into a mass fight, you know, not a fisticuffs kind of fight, an intensity training kind of fight, like a race. So that's kind of how some sessions would end up going. And again, there were parts of it that I absolutely loved and I lapped it up, and you know, I did improve massively under him. I think from joining him, when I don't know if I'd ever run under 40 minutes for a 10k at that point, by a year in I was running 34s, and admittedly that was only in a couple of my best races, but I'd got down to running sort of 34 mid, 34 high in a couple of races, so I had massive improvements under him.
That's insane.
But by the time it's huge improvements, and I think that's a lot down to him, and that's a lot down to how I was potentially before I joined him. So yeah, I really did learn a lot. I learned how to actually properly be an athlete under Darren. I learned what it meant to be professional about things and to really take it seriously and to properly commit to something, and that just how the little things matter. I learned all of that under him, but ultimately I felt that it was time to go at the end of 2012, and we'd had a good 3 years, and it's time to move on. And then when I moved into Leeds, what I really liked about that was their approach is very different to Darren. Darren's approach revolves around a lot more intensity, a lot more what I would call middle of the road intensity. So doing stuff at higher than your sort of basic aerobic pace, but not at your maximum pace, sort of in this middle ground area. They do a lot of work there, whereas now I do more work, but I do more of it at a lower intensity, and then I pop in the hard sessions at a higher intensity than what I would have done with Darren.
Yep.
So it's sort of a more polarized approach. And I really liked the idea of really putting in this volume and seeing if that could be the thing that brought me up another stage. Because by the time I left Darren, yes, I was occasionally on a good race, I'd get a top 10. On a really great race, I'd get a top 5.
Yeah.
But realistically, I had a lot of 15 to 20 to maybe even down to 30th places. I had a lot of those. And I wanted a bit more consistency, and I wasn't getting that. And it was time to sort of try and start, as I said before, try and start winning stuff.
So talk us through your first World Series win.
Yeah, that was bizarre. So after the Commonwealth Games, I mentioned earlier that both Helen and Nom were injured, and both of them had plantar fascia injuries that year. And so then I decided I wanted to join the cool gang.
Yep.
Got myself a plantar fascia injury as well.
And a boot.
and a boot. A boot to go with it. In fact, I had two boots that year, one for either foot. I'd actually had really, really long-standing plantar fascia injuries from about 6 years in. I was this point of having sort of plantar fascia problems, and to the point, you know, where you just wake up every morning and you're sore, you can't walk to the toilet, you hobble, you start every run with a limp, but you get through. And I think actually I'd only probably missed a handful, maybe three runs in 6 years because of it, but it was just something that was nearly always there. And it did get very bad in the 2014 season. I was told at one point by the doctor not to run, to take a few months off. Because one of them especially was likely to tear. But we sort of politely declined that advice because I wanted to go to the Commonwealth Games. So we opted for some painful treatment instead. And I got there, I managed to qualify, and then somehow put together this really great block of 6 weeks of training, which is absolutely down to Emma Deacon and Malcolm Brown, the sort of coach and physio in Leeds, and our Dr. James Brown as well. Between them, they got me that block of training that then got me the medal. So without them, I wouldn't have even been in Glasgow, let alone winning a medal. Mm-hmm. So I did all that, and then 3 weeks later, I was riding this wave of, right, I've got this confidence in the Commonwealth Games, I'm ready to go and try and sort of win things on World Series level. Day before, I was due to fly out to Stockholm for the World Series race, my plantar fascia tour. So that was my season done. Which was painful, followed by boot on one foot, treat that one, boot on the other foot, treat that one. You know, we sort of took some time to do both of them, but unfortunately it just took a really, really long time to heal. And I didn't end up running another step from the moment my plantar fascia tore in August until January. So it was 5 months, which was a really, really long time not to do any running. And for quite a lot of that time as well, no one could really give me any timeline. Mm. Everyone always said this about plantar fascia injuries, they're a right swear word, because you can't really dictate how they're going to go, and they're different for each person. And when Nonna torn her plantar fascia, it healed really quite quickly. It was the fact that she then got a navicular stress fracture that put her out for the rest of the season. Her plantar fascia healed really quickly. Mine took 5 months. You know, it was really frustrating, and there's no rhyme or reason or logic to it. You just kind of have to wait it out. So when I started running in the January, and I mean by running 5 by 1 minute on, 1 minute off. Yeah. And then it took like a month to get up to running 30 minutes. So we're in sort of middle to end of February by this point, and I had to enter if I wanted to do any of the World Series races. So I entered Cape Town just on the basis that I had to enter it at that point, even if I wasn't going to go, and I'd have another few weeks to decide whether I was going to do it or not. We'd also decided that we knew what the Olympic selection policy was by this point. So I had crutched my way into the meeting in the November of 2014, where they told me that I had to podium in both Chicago and Rio to get on the Olympic team, or it was completely down to discretion. And at this point, I've never made a podium in anything other than the Commonwealth Games, and I'm on crutches. So I thought, right, well, that's good. Better step things up then. So we worked out, with the help of Malcolm, I sat down and worked out that if I didn't race in the Cape Town race, the World Series, early 2015, I wouldn't get another Olympic distance in until Rio, the test event, and that was one of the selection races. So we decided that I'd go to Cape Town. So we'd made this decision. I think we actually decided on it about 5 weeks out. We decided, right, we'll go to Cape Town. And at this point, I'm like, God, I'm going to Cape Town, right? I'm just up to half an hour of running.
Going to Cape Town as a cripple.
I'm going to Cape Town as a cripple. This could be really interesting. But we were very practical about it. We sat down and went, right, well, you're going to go and basically just got to get through this race. And doing the race will move you on a level, because that's invariably what happens with me every year. I do my first 10K and that moves me on for the rest of the year. So we decided to approach it very much as a training race and not to put too much pressure on it, but just I had to do it. So I had a 10K under my belt before we went to Rio. But then everything just started changing. Week on week, I just got better. I got fitter. I got so fit so quickly. And I think that's a huge testament, actually, to my boyfriend, who's also my coach now, Rhys Davey. He's my bike coach. And I asked him to be my bike coach after the Commonwealth Games. Mm. And when I couldn't run, I rode. And I rode a lot. You know, I was riding 18, sometimes up to 19, 20 hours a week, wow. Just so that I could put in the volume.
Yep.
So it meant that when I actually started running, I was really fit. And yep. I think that really helped. It didn't take me very long to get the real, real fitness back. And as every week went by, as I got closer to Cape Town, I started feeling so good, so much better than I had any like real right to feel.
Yeah.
People were sort of like, really, Vicky, you're going to Cape Town and like, you haven't run for 5 months? I'm like, I am fine. And I remember the day I flew actually to Cape Town, I was flying later in the day and I did like a half track session in the morning with Malcolm and it went really well. And he sort of said, you know, if it was a 5K, I think you'd really, really do well. I think you could get on the podium. He's like, but it's a 10K.
Damn it, it's double that.
I know. And I sort of thought, you know what, Malcolm? I'm all right. I think I'm going to be all right. I hadn't run anything longer than 50 minutes at this point. And, you know, normally we put in a lot more volume than that. But I still went there feeling really good, feeling really confident. And actually, when I got there, I just still felt really good. I traveled really well. And in the race itself, nothing seemed to get in the way. It all just went as smooth as it could do. And on the run, I almost was waiting because I didn't want to go too early, knowing I hadn't put the training in, I hadn't put the fitness in, and I didn't want to go and then blow up and Malcolm sit there with his head in his hands and go, oh, what's she done? I told her she'd only be fit for 5K. So I waited and waited and waited, and when I actually did go, it just felt so good, and I felt so sort of, it felt really right, and it didn't, you know, everything clicked on that race. It felt really good, and winning it was a bit of disbelief, but at the same time it sort of just, it reiterated to me that actually I knew I was ready, and I was.
Yep.
And that was something that I've taken ever since that moment, is when I've known I've been ready for a race, I have been ready for a race. And it's not kind of, and there's been no surprises on that level. I've not turned up to a race and thought I was in the best shape and turned up and had a shocker. When I've known, I've known.
Wow. So Rio, right? The last 200 metres. No. Go back a little bit further. What? The last, I don't know, 600, 800 metres? What was going through your mind at that point?
So I had to completely dissociate from the fact that it was none, because obviously we're such good friends and we went there wanting a medal for both of us. That had always been the plan. We both wanted to come home with two medals, one for me and one for her. And that was always what we wanted. But by about 5K into the run, it became really clear that that wasn't going to happen. And if I'm honest, it's one of the things I actually regret. I think I gave up on silver at that point and decided to fight for bronze. And seeing the way that Nicola really faded in the last lap, I wish we'd pushed it on a bit more. In the last sort of couple of Ks, I felt that the longer Non dragged it out from, so Non really, as you might have noticed on TV, Non likes to lead. Non always likes to be in front if she's running with someone. And I would come around to try and take the pace on a little bit for a bit, and then she just comes straight back around me again. So I'm okay, settled in behind her. I don't mind being that person. She really likes to sort of be the person in control of the pace, and I felt that she would try and drag it out probably from between 1 and 2K to go. And I thought if she did that might be her chance to sort of really kick away from me. I've always felt that I've got quite a good kick. And I felt that the longer this went on without the pace going up, the better chance I stood come the finish line to be the one who got the medal. So with about 800 to go, I'm still thinking that it hasn't really picked up and that I'm comfortable, I'm fine. And with 600 to go, the same. And with 400 to go, the same. And then I'm sort of like, right, where's that blue carpet? When's it coming? And I just saw it and went. And I just thought, right, this is it. You've got to go right now. Do not look back. And that's absolutely what I did. And I think I felt, I don't know, because it's not like me and Non sprint against each other very often, but I do feel that I've got quite a good kick. And when I went, I thought I had it, but I just didn't dare look back. And I got across the line, and there's barely really any time to celebrate, even though realistically, if you take away the fact that it was Non that came fourth, it really is something to celebrate because of all the years and all the ups and downs and the injuries and everything else that go into it. Really is just, and it's, you know, it's the pinnacle, it's the Olympics, it's something to celebrate, but there just wasn't really any time for that because I was too worried about getting there first. But yeah, it was quite the feeling.
Has it changed your friendship in any way since?
No, you know, it hasn't. And that's probably one of the things I'm the most proud about, is that I gave Non a card the day before the Olympic Games, just sort of saying that friends first, you know, and I really hope that that would be true, that we'd be friends no matter what happened, we knew we'd both given everything to get there and that we'd done everything we could in our preparation, and that I wished her the best, but that at the end of it, no matter what, win, lose or draw, we would stay friends. And I can honestly say that's happened, and that's a massive testament to her, because it can't be easy being the one who missed out by 3 seconds, and to the person that you have to see every day and that you live with. But I can honestly say that it's exactly like it always was. We got back home and it was just like another day.
How good is that?
Just like another day. Yeah, and that I'm really proud of that, because I feel like this is a friendship that we have now that's so strong that it will always remain. You know, I don't think there's anything really that can break us now, and I really love that, you know, she's a friend for life and she's a great girl. I'm so pleased that that's what I've achieved really in the last 3 years, is this incredible friendship.
And a bronze medal. That's awesome. That is really, really cool.
And a bronze medal, yeah.
So, Vicky, what next for you? Are you going to carry on to the Commonwealth Games at Gold Coast?
Yes, that's the next target. Commonwealth Games Gold Coast is the next plan.
And then TBC.
I haven't really got that far. Yeah, I mean, I'm 30 now, sadly. And I don't know how much more I've got in me, how much more I want to do. That's not to say that I'm ready to quit right now, but I'm very aware that, you know, people do tend to start slowing down a little bit, and the world might move on a level. There might be another Gwen coming through the ranks. You know, there might be all sorts that happens. I might be injured, I might be ill. Even trying to qualify, as we all know, is just such a hard task, especially within the UK. Yeah, I don't know if I'll go again. But at the moment, I think Commonwealth Games is definitely on my radar, and I think I'll reassess it in 2 years' time, see where I'm at. See whether I feel like I can go again. And also, this is something I've said a few times now, I don't think that having won a medal now, I don't think I'd go just to go. I've been twice, and I don't want to go again on the basis of, I'll just go to make up the numbers. If I'm going again, I think I'm going because I think I can be as good or better this time. So I'm going if I think I can be a contender.
Was it quite inspiring to see Nicola Spierig do what she did?
Yeah, I mean, she was definitely the dark horse of the day. There's no denying that. I knew she was in good shape. You know, we trained in summer at the same time as her a lot this summer, and I know her running's very good at the moment. I knew all of those things. I was surprised at how well she swam. I think that was the big surprise on the day. She did put in a great swim that put her in the group. Her tactics on the bike were interesting. If I'm honest, I'm not entirely sure what she was trying to achieve. I think she trying to sort of sap the legs, but all it did was mean that everyone else went, well, I'm not going to work with you then. So, you know, we'd had certain plans in place to sort of drag out the pace, but really when she just wanted to sort of attack and attack and attack off the front, and the first time she sort of attacks me when I've taken a turn off her, well, that's it, I'm sorry, I'm not going to work with you if you're just going to attack me. So she did a lot of the work on her own, but I think I have seen something she's written since about it was a specific tactic for her to really put in loads and loads of surges and see how people responded. And obviously, in a lot of ways, it did work, because I don't think many people ran particularly well. And I think maybe then she did actually achieve what she wanted to, because she hurt a lot of people's legs. I wouldn't have said it had that effect on me. But then maybe I'm just one of the lucky ones, or maybe I was one of the better prepared ones. I don't know. But yeah, she was an incredible dark horse on the day. I don't think I would have picked her for a medal before the race. And she actually said afterwards that she was more emotional about that one than winning the one in London. Because to try and go back and win something again when you've already won, she said, was just so hard and so much pressure on her. And I think she was absolutely delighted with that.
Do you think her tactics had an impact on sort of your tactics, or like Team GB's tactics, towards, you know, the plan to probably try to beat Gwen kind of thing?
Well, it didn't. So basically the way she played it would have really, really affected what we had in plan, were it not for the fact that firstly Helen was sick. So poor Helen didn't make it up the first hill in the first group. She'd been really poorly that day. She'd had about 48 hours of sort of stomach bug and was really sick on the morning of the race. And, you know, poor girl was just not right. So that took our number down by one. You know, then we're a team of two. Non wasn't feeling her absolute best on the day, in terms of she said she didn't feel she had the legs on the bike. She found that really hard. And for me, I'd been a bit unwell in sort of the 18 hours before the race. So all of our game plans changed on race day. The plan that we'd had to drag it out as a group went out the window completely. And I was actually surprised by how good I felt, considering sort of my stomach upset of the 18 hours beforehand. I actually was really surprised that when I got on the bike, I felt okay. And I could have done a bit more than I did on the bike, but I went into sort of self-preservation mode. Everything that we'd planned for was a real attacking race and a real, you know, in a lot of ways, similar to how Alistair and Johnny had taken it on and just absolutely taken it to their opposition and smashed them to pieces within the first two laps of the bike. That was a lot of what we'd kind of planned to do. And all of us were riding well enough to make that happen. It just happened that, unfortunately, with one thing or another, we couldn't really execute that on day. So for me, I just decided to play it safe. For me, it was a case of, well, I don't know how I'm going to be able to run. I don't know how my stomach's going to hold up on this run. I don't know if my legs are going to have any energy left in them, whether I'm going to be a bit depleted, all the rest of it. You just have so many unknowns. I just had to play it differently.
Yeah. Well, Vicky, you played a blinder. It was really, really good to watch. I think everyone will be so inspired by just sort of seeing you and the progressions that you've made, you know, over the past few years. So huge congratulations, and I will leave it there because I know you've got another interview to do as well. But thank you very much for your time.
Yeah. You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on.
I've got to hand it to you, Hals. That was a really enjoyable interview. I loved that one. I thought you did a brilliant job, and I've got to say, she sounds like she's welcome at my house for a cup of tea and a cake anytime. She sounds like a really good laugh.
Yeah,
I loved talking about how like her mindset had to change, because she was super honest about the fact it was like I'd never even been on a podium in a race before, and then I got that medal at the Commonwealth Games and everything changed. I love that.
Yep. And sometimes it is that confidence that you have one good result and then you suddenly realise, all right, okay, I can do this.
Totally. Yeah, I think a lot of people are like that. It's that kind of see it and then believe it thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Coach can tell you you're capable of it, but you don't really believe it yourself until you've actually achieved that thing, and then one result can change everything and you go, oh, okay, well, my coach has been telling me I can do this for 9 months now, guess he or she's right.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if, you know, you don't have to be coming one, you know, first, second or third in a race. It could be that, you know, I don't know, maybe you get the time that you were hoping for but you were sort of doubting that you could get an Olympic, or you complete your first sprint, whatever, it's actually achieving that goal.
Yeah.
That you kind of think, not sure.
Yeah. And the other thing I think is great when we have these really top level athletes on is I think it's tempting for us normal people to sit here and think, well, it's all right for her. She doesn't get injured like I do. You know, she hasn't got to put up with this and I've got to go to work. And you hear a story and you go, she's basically been held together by the physio, Emma Deakin, for the whole of that year.
Yeah.
And constantly been in pain and having painful treatments every single day. That's what's allowed her to actually go out there and race. And so it really made me think, well, you need to stop moaning about this and just get a bit more physio treatment, because everyone has to deal with it. If you're trying to compete at any level, you've just got to accept it as part of the process.
Yeah. And the other thing is, if, you know, for Vicky at the moment, she's a full-time athlete. That is her job.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we don't have to rely on doing triathlon or getting good results. Do we? It's not our job. We have other things to go on.
Yeah, but I reckon the flip side of that is that there's probably tens of thousands of age group athletes who take their sport just as seriously in their head as she does.
Yep.
And the temptation is to think, oh, I'm just getting injured all the time. But the reality is, maybe the more people like Vicky talk about how much physio treatment they have, the more the rest of us normal people accept, oh, all right, if they have to have physio treatment all the time, it's probably all right for me to have some of the time as well.
Yeah. Yep. That it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
Cool. Good interview. Right. Tell me about bodybuilding.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is just quite funny. So I happened to be in a gym over the weekend, Rob, and I had to sort of work with this guy who used to be a rugby player, used to be a number 8, right?
Okay.
And so picture like a 6'5" massive guy,
yeah,
who could happily lift 20 kilogram dumbbell in one arm on each arm. And then there's me.
You're giving him instruction.
Yeah.
Love it. And I can see you doing that. You've got the authority to do it. I'd listen to you if you told me what to do in the gym.
But it was more we then had to swap. And he was like, so what kind of weight do you want? 8 kilograms? And I was like, no.
8 pounds?
I think we're talking like 5, maybe? Tried 5. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, oh, my arms are about to fall off. No, so it was just the contrast between Mr. Bodybuilder, former rugby player, and me. And when I said to him, oh, so what's your one rep max, you know, do you think on this with a chest press? He was like, I could lift the whole thing.
Yeah, 220 kilos, no problem.
I thought, this is brilliant, this is genius. So that was my bodybuilding news, Rob. My other news, we mentioned cake before, and someone had actually asked on Twitter about this. Fueled by Cake number 2 is underway.
Awesome.
That's
awesome.
Like, yeah, it's good news, isn't it?
That is fantastic. Right, I'm going to have to come up with a recipe.
Yes.
He said, never having baked anything in his life. We'll get one from my mum.
That's it. That's exactly what I'm after. Yep.
Rob will be mama done. Oxygen addict cake recipe. There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm hoping to have it done in kind of like around this time next year, basically.
Right. I'll give you a year to get it done. Brilliant stuff.
I'm not going to stress myself out quite as much. I'm going to give myself a more realistic deadline this time.
That's not the cup of try way. I want it ready by next month.
Oh, no. But yeah, money this time is going to go to Cheshire East Hospice, Melanoma UK, and Young Epilepsy. So three small charities, and I'm so excited about doing a second version. It's going to be great.
Oh, brilliant. Think of all the people we're going to be able to lean on for recipes as well. This is going to be...
Well, I can tell you who I've already
even
got.
Even better. Go on, tell us who you've got lined up.
Already, Rachel Joyce has provided me with a recipe. Chrissy Wellington has provided me with a recipe. Catherine Foe is practicing her baking.
Love it.
Joanna Rousel-Shand has given me a recipe. Emma Pooley, I think, is going to give me a recipe. And then Vassos Alexander from Radio 2 is going to give me another recipe. So we are on it, and it's going to be good.
We are rolling.
I'm so excited.
Every single person we've ever interviewed to get you on. This is going to be ace.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
All right, watch this space, everyone. Right, we should wrap this up, I think, Hels.
I think we should. Rob, it's been a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure, as always. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. You've been listening to the Cup of Tri podcast. I'm Coach Rob Wilby.
I'm Helen Murray.
And until next week, everybody, have a great training and racing week. Be safe. And we'll talk to you again in a week when we will have an interview with Jane Hansom.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll see you again soon. Bye now.